Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Earwolf announcement.
Starting this Saturday, March 31st, archives, episodes older than 6 months of this show, James Bonding, will be available exclusively to Stitcher Premium subscribers.
Yes, this means starting March 31st, if you want to hear older episodes of our show, all you have to do is subscribe to Stitcher Premium.
But we wanted to give you final warning so you can take any actions necessary to hear all the episodes before they go to Stitcher Premium. Like if you want to download them all before free before then, who are we to stop you?
No one. We're no one stopping you.
We're here to tell you to do it, even.
Please, just do it, everybody. Subscribing to Stitcher Premium is a great way to directly support our show. Plus, you can get access to hundreds of exclusive series like Hollywood Handbook, the Pro Version, Comedy Bang Bang Tour shows, Throwing Shade's Deeper Shade of Shade, and more.
Including the potential James Bond commentaries that we're supposed to do by the time this contract is up.
Yes, and we will be doing them.
That's right.
Hopefully pretty soon.
So, do whatever you need to do, whether it's downloading all of our episodes and filling up your hard drive, or just subscribing to Stitcher Premium for $4.99 a month, or just $34.99 for the entire year.
And it is very important that all of you out there, if you're going to do this, please use our promo code BOND at stitcher.com/premium for a 1 month free trial.
That's stitcher.com/premium and code BOND.
And for more information on all the shows affected by the large scale archiving, head over to earwolf.com.
The Great Culling.
Matt and Matt and Matt. James Bonding Podcast.
This is James Bonding on a lovely overcast afternoon.
Yeah.
I'm Matt.
I'm also Matt.
And we're here with another M, a returning favorite, Maurice LaMarche.
M-M-M-M-L. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me back.
M-G-M-M-M-L.
We're finally making good on our promise to cover some of the non-canon Bond films, starting with the most infamous of them all.
Couldn't get much more non-canon.
I know.
Casino Royale.
But ironically, there were a couple of canons in this movie.
There were.
Yeah.
Actual literal canons.
Yeah.
And actors from the canon.
That's true.
It's the 1967 Casino Royale by no less than four directors.
That's beginning to make more sense.
Oh yeah. Did you?
Here's what I did. Guess. I have so
Houston
ignored
took
this.
Took a slot.
I've ignored this movie for its entire existence.
Why do you think you've never watched it?
I was just like annoyed by its existence. I was like, why?
It's
why does this
out
movie
there
exist?
Noodling you.
And I had never watched it until this morning.
Wow. Well, and Maurice, this is really how you came to us saying, I want to do this one when it comes up. So what's your history with this film?
My history was that, and it's funny, I actually this morning double checked. I don't know if I mentioned on the last podcast, I grew up with the Myers brothers.
Mm-hmm.
At least spent a little bit of time in grade school with Peter Myers and Paul Myers. Was 2 years behind and was my brother Paul's best friend. And then little Mike was in like the second grade. So, but the three Myers brothers are pretty inseparable and they lived at one building away from where my dad lived. So we would hang out a lot and we had a thing for Flint movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, but this movie especially was very up for us. And I checked with Peter and Paul, on Messenger and we watched it together. We had watched it together. We don't know if Mike was there, but this the film was very, very big for them, and they must have watched it dozens of times because the influence of this movie is all over Austin Powers.
It's crazy how similar it is.
Yeah. But, I mean, Austin Powers becomes a spoof of a spoof.
Right.
You know, at this point. But we talked at length about that this was, for a lot of us, the real introduction to Bond. I had thought I'd seen it in theaters, but I remembered since I was last on, I saw a trailer for it. Because when I downloaded the film to watch it again, I saw the trailer. I went, that's what I saw. I didn't see the whole movie. I didn't watch the whole movie till that afternoon with the Myers boys and a bunch of other guys from our sixth grade class. And so my father had the Playboy that had the pictorial of this. And I remember getting particularly, you know, doing a double take at the picture of Woody Allen leering over Dahlia LaVie, strapped tastefully nude to the table in his
covered only by metal
covered
bands.
Only by little band metal bands. And I remember this was when I cemented in my evil lair fetish, as well as my tasteful nude fetish. And the line that Woody has when she goes, "Is this how you treat?" When Dahlia LaVie says, "Is this how you treat all the women that you're attracted to?" Because I undress them and tie them up. I remember asking my father, "Dad, I learned that in the Boy Scouts." And I remember saying to my dad, "Should I join the Boy Scouts, Dad? I'm the right age for the Boy Scouts, right?" I actually took them literally. But
you're probably better off. Look what happened to Woody Allen.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The joke of course, is that at that point, Dahlia LaVie was too old for him. He was acting. But we watched the movie, and there was so much comedy that I didn't get.
There's still some in there.
I agree.
But there were some great jokes. The you know, especially about British society and about the decline of the British Empire. Yeah. You know, I mean, it was literally in its last gasp around 1967 or so. And there's so many things in the movie that are, you know, just like the end of Britishness. And so, but I just loved like the bigness of it. And I remembered the next time it was on TV, because we watched it on something that was called Sunday Afternoon at the Movies, I think it was called. And the next time it was on, I remembered audio taping. We didn't have videotape in those days.
I used to do that too.
The 1960s. So I would listen to the film because I became fascinated with the voices, especially the sound of Wells' voice and the sound of Woody Allen's voice, but also David Niven. And I got to the point where I could actually quote, you know, lines from the movie, like,
"I'm going to have that check, Mr. Bond. The most exquisite torture is all in the mind."
And I would just walk around the house doing things, which I guess this is why I ended up doing what I do for a living.
So is this the origin of your Wells impression?
It's
this very
the original
film?
Origin. Now, of course, I was 10 at the time, 10 or 11, so I wouldn't have... I wouldn't have actually had the bass response in my voice to actually do the voice. So it would have been a falsetto Orson Welles. But I'd always been fascinated with the voices. When I was a kid, I used to watch cartoons, and I wanted to know who were those people.
Yeah.
Who, watching the Warner Brothers cartoon, I had no idea that it was one guy.
It's incredible.
For the most part, it was Mel Blanc and Arthur Q. Bryan as Elmer Fudd. And other than that, it was Mel Blanc. But the sounds were what fascinated me as much as Dahlia LaVie tied up to a lab table. But so I just really got into those voices.
Can we hear what little 10-year-old Maurice LaMarche would sound like walking around doing Orson Welles?
I got to heal him.
"Going to have that check, Mr. Bond. The most exquisite torture is all in the mind."
I don't know. It was crazy.
Oh, God.
But this film, I got to say, though, upon rewatching it, this is the first time I've watched it in a long time. It's a fucking mess, and I really feel... I feel bad
it's
that
really
I,
something.
That I know you guys were going to do this film anyway, but I know I also wrote you and pushed and said,
"No, you.
If you ever do Casino Royale, I want to come in. I want
to." We've been wanting to knock out another movie that wasn't in the canon for a while, and it just so happened that you you were the ace up our sleeve of like, well, Maurice can actually come in and do this on very short notice.
Well, we have this great Goldilocks of the three versions of this where, Maurice, you grew up with it. I've seen it a few times just like in my Bond interests, but I'm by no means like seen it as many times as the rest of the Bond films. And Matt, this is your first time.
First time.
So what was your initial reaction to this thing?
My initial reaction, I was delighted to see Mathis. When the, you know, when it starts, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then when they go to Sir James Bond's retirement estate, I was delighted.
Oh, God. If I could lounge in Niven's lounging wear, oh, my God.
It starts out actually rather
very
well.
Promising.
Yes. And really I liked promising. The plot point of the idea that Bond was an original from World War II and then retired, and that because that was a conceit they wanted to use for Skyfall.
Yeah.
The castle or the ancestral home was a retirement home for the former James Bonds. They thought about that for 2 seconds.
It'd be crazy if they'd gone that full circle, no, along really with 007 being a code name, which is also the case for this movie, you know, that
right.
It's passed on.
Yeah.
But I thought that sort of showed some promise, the idea of
a celibate Bond. I was into the idea of what would a retired James Bond be like. And quite frankly, I feel like he'd be very much like that.
No kidding.
Niven is so good.
He drives the Bentley.
One of the original, if not the original choice
that's right.
Fleming had in mind
yeah.
for the character of Bond.
Yeah.
Even though he later wrote that he looked like Hoagy Carmichael
yeah,
with
Hoagy
a slight
Carmichael.
Scar on his cheek. Hoagy Carmichael was about 6'3", rather lanky fellow, but you know, Niven would be who he wanted to play it. Niven was 57 when he did this picture.
Wow.
He's 3 years younger than what I'm about to turn next week. I remember when I was a kid.
Happy
going,
birthday!
Thank you. By the time this airs, I'll have hit my 60th birthday.
Oh my God! Everybody, send it, Marisa.
Oh my
happy
God!
Birthday.
I just let it out that I'm 60. It's over now. Ageism will kick
you. You look great. I was literally just thinking when you were talking about watching it seeing the trailer in 1960. I was like, wait, how old is Maurice? This is crazy. And then I was like thinking, well, you know, he did all those voices and I was like 12 when that was on. I was like, well, he must have been 22 when he did that. And I was like, well, hang on a second. That doesn't work either.
No, fat don't crack. That's you, here I come.
Matt, get me a tamale.
You got it, buddy.
Matt has just served us these delicious tamales, by the way, to get our energy up.
He goes to the
SoPass Farmers Market, and he picks up these tamales.
These handmade tamales, they're incredible.
Not today, but tamales.
It's hard to...
Right. I'm sorry I said that. I really am. Oh, my God.
Oldest Say that as Orson Welles, at least.
Not today, but tamale. I can't believe I said that. They're full of country goodness and green penis. I'm leaving.
So. That's amazing. I would buy those. If I heard a radio commercial for that. Okay, so it starts very promisingly. I like the idea. I really enjoyed all of the various branch heads driving into that crossroads together.
Yeah, that's a really interesting opening shot.
Yes.
Yeah, and then they all get into one car.
Yeah.
And the sort of the bemused irritation of the one chauffeur who has to drive them.
Yeah, he drew the short straw.
What's problem, pal? These are like, you got Charles Boyer in your car.
I know. And just give me anything with William Holden.
Yes.
I will eat it up. God, I love that man. Yeah.
He's great. He's great. I love that it was both Charles Boyer and Kurt Kasner. I'm a bit of a theater freak. And Kurt Kasner had originated the part in Barefoot in the Park of the crazy guy who lives upstairs.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He originated on Broadway, and Boyer played it in the film. And there they are standing together.
Oh,
yeah, I'm a theater freak, and I can't remember the name of that character. Such a great character.
I can't either.
George.
No. George of the Jungle. Sorry, I have that. If I hear a name or anything like that, I sort of semi-Tourette's song titles and things like that.
That's why you're great for podcasting. That's all podcasting is. That's right. Stream of conscience Tourette's.
Hands down, my favorite thing about this entire film by a country mile is Hadley. And that super British guy that helps Niven out.
Oh,
Is he the first one? Is he the very first one with the very perfect hair? And as soon as he walks in, this whole film is a British off.
Yeah.
It really I remember as this I'm guy watching wins. It going, oh my God, it's like they knew that Matt and Matt
were he's you know, like a proto
the most British character. You can't pick the most British character in this film.
I know.
There's so many
I
of
would
them.
Choose him.
Is this the one that is pointing out the map?
Yes.
He wins.
He's incredible, isn't he?
He is, what is amazing. What is
that guy done? Although that general when Maida Bond is in the we're jumping around.
Yeah.
But when she's at she's the at the art auction, he goes, "Hello, Brunilla.
She's a war's broken out.
There's sort of wars broken out." He's pretty friggin' British too.
This Hadley guy though is kind of like a proto Mr. Bean.
That auction scene, I found delightfully funny. Like, we will stand when we're bidding. We'll sit when we're bidding. And the British are like, we'll do both.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. That was that moment so that really British. Worked for me.
That, by the way, that actor's name was Richard Wattis, the British Army officer.
Oh, Derek Nimmo is Hadley.
Oh, my goodness.
What else was he in? Just only British movies.
And the army, the armory scene. Their version of Q and then the tailor, outfits him. Also extraordinarily British.
The tailor, I was like, in my mind, I was just like, oh, was this just hilarious to people then? Like the idea of an effeminate tailor?
It wasn't spoken of.
I know.
It's
interesting.
Yeah.
Peter Sellers peeking out going, hello, sailor.
Yeah,
and that was risque comedy. Ooh, he's poking fun at the homosexuals.
Peter Sellers was he was great. I really enjoyed him, just screen presence wise. I was like, oh, Peter Sellers is.
Well, his involvement in the picture it's somewhat legendary that he really didn't want to be there, and walked off before his scenes were done.
Uh-huh.
Which is why the film is such a friggin' mess.
Huh.
He left before they could really wrap up his character, and that's why they wrote in that Ursula Andress, for no reason at all, shoots him. It wasn't supposed to end that way. And he and Wells apparently couldn't stand each other.
That tracks.
There's really only one shot of the two of them in the same and everything else is one shots, and they apparently filmed on different days for the rest of it. They just
two very big personalities. Wow,
that is crazy. I'm fascinated to read more about the making of this movie and
I would almost want to see a documentary about the making of this film. It would almost be as interesting as the Lazenby documentary.
Yeah, I agree. I would rather see that. What was the thinking of four directors? Just like, let's do this collaboration piece and that'll be part of the fun of it all? Or?
I have no idea. That part I'm not privy
to. I think all of the stuff with David Niven works.
Houston, I think. Yeah. I think the only way Houston would do it, and they wanted Houston, was he'd say, I have to be able to direct the sequence. Good spy is a pure spy. It was great up until his wig flies off.
Yeah.
And then I went, oh.
We're in trouble.
Yes, until his wig flies
but
off.
But I mean, I could see if I was watching the film for the first time as you were this morning, Matt Myra, that you might think, well, this isn't so bad. And then there's M signal and then shoo.
Were you clear on what was happening?
No.
Because it's not clear that they die or...
Apparently
Holden's
clear.
Character lives.
Yeah.
Ransom.
It becomes clear when he's delivering the toupee to M's.
Yeah, I know it becomes clear then, but yeah.
Yeah, and also I'm like, who's firing the mortar shell? I thought that here's what I thought was happening when I was watching it. I thought that when he lit the cigar, that's the signal to fire the mortar. And then I thought their whole plan was we need James Bond back. He's never going to leave his home. Well, then if he won't come back willingly, we'll destroy his home. So he has to come back. That was the plan, right?
That seemed like the plan. And yet he wasn't. I don't think M was planning to get killed.
And yet that was not the plan.
So the plan went a little bit askew. And yet there was Smirsch. I mean, what happened to M's actual widow? We assume she was eliminated. I don't know. But there's Deborah Kerr.
Yeah.
There as in person. And you'd think that David Niven Bond would have met Mrs. McDotty at some point, but there she
unless
is.
She was there to be a double, because there's so many doubles in the movie.
That's true. The doubling is a very big part of this film. But That to me is when it sort of starts to fall apart.
Like, I'm confused by the very, very beginning of the movie with Mathis.
That threw me too, because it's like if you cut from that to about an hour 40 into the film,
then it makes sense.
It makes sense because the next thing, that's the shot before Mathis and Peter Sellers Bond get into the car.
Yeah,
I don't even remember what is the Mathis thing in the beginning.
It goes James Bond. I was like, I'm with Mathis with the special police. Follow me.
What is that structure they're in with the graffiti, all that circular...
The graffiti that says Les Beatles?
Yeah, Les Beatles and all that. It's a circular aluminum band around a pillar. Is that like a public men's room or what the hell is that?
I've
never seen anything it's the like
that. It's the first shot of the movie, right?
It's the very first shot. The film starts after the MGM lion. Mathis is there. Mr. Bond.
I was getting excited. I was like, oh, are they going to, is this literally a retelling of Casino Royale that has some humor in it?
Yeah.
But it is not. It's a manic.
Originally going to be that. And then what was the reason? There was a reason that it changed, and I forget what it is.
Charles K. Feldman only does comedies might have been part of the reason. I'm not sure. I mean, he brought Woody Allen on board.
That the other thing I laughed at or found funny, I didn't actually laugh out loud. I was like, oh, that's cute, was him escaping the firing squad and then jumping the wall
that's
on
a good
the
gag.
Other side of the
that's
fire.
A really good gag.
Pure Woody Allen.
That's
he wrote everything he was in. That was part of his deal. He had to write all of his own scenes.
Yeah.
That I've picked up on the internet over the years. Okay, over the last year, because I've only had the internet for a year, because I'm old. No. But yeah, that's something that, that's why all of his stuff works, because he had almost an auteur-like
presence. But there. It's so hard to describe the... Okay, so there's someone. Is there so?
Are you trying to figure out the plot?
No. Oh. The director situation. Someone's directing the David Niven stuff, right? Someone's directing the Peter Sellers stuff, right? Someone's directing the Woody Allen stuff. What's the fourth thing?
I don't know.
Weird psychedelic stuff that they're all involved in. Those hideouts and that thing that takes place in East Berlin.
Yeah,
with Mata Bond.
I liked that.
That was a huge production number, and it did have a great look to it. But I felt it kind of stopped the film for a little bit.
Yeah.
And the film's got some very incesty, rapey...
Oh, the best God. Visual.
Yeah, the bathtub scene where Ruby, by the way, Ruby from Honor Majesty's Secret Service, Angela Sklar, is in the bathtub waiting for David Niven saying, I used to do this to my daddy. But not even like when I was a kid.
But listen.
That's the same actress who plays Ruby.
Yes. 11, they're adopted.
See, I was congratulating myself because the art auctioneer was the same as
From Russia with Love.
Yeah. What's his
name?
Oh,
yeah. Vladek
Shibol. The chess champion.
Like, I got two of them.
Yeah.
Ursula Andress and Vladek.
Yeah.
But no, that's Ruby. That's amazing.
Vladek Shibol, I think is his name.
Yeah. I love the sort of... the way he just comes out blasting away, but still somewhat elegant.
Yeah,
still somewhat,
he's a great da, 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 poof, 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 character face.
Cop
yeah.
walks right up to him and he's like,
My favorite visual gag in the movie is the Jeep driving from West Berlin to East Berlin and it turned red. Like they had just swapped the Jeep out when it went behind the wall and they just drove out the red Jeep. Oh, I thought that was very funny.
That's funny. I didn't even notice that. I think this more than any, I really did tune out the longer it went on. I was just kind of like it plods and
well, having never seen it, I was like, I can't like during a normal James Bond viewing for this podcast, I will often scrub through sweeping establishing shots, which will save you about 25 minutes per James Bond movie, honestly. But this one I was like, well, I don't know where these scrubbing, I don't know where to do it. So I have to sit here and enjoy to the best of my ability.
Love this movie because it's in my favorite era, probably of filmmaking.
Yeah.
It's got design. It's a period piece. It's that kind of fun, freewheeling, strange movie. And I think they have an attempt at some actual absurdist humor, but it just misfires almost every time. And I'm surprised I don't actually like this movie, but that's really saying something about
what do you think of the TJ Brass?
No, I don't love it. I normally like the
a Herb Albert
dress.
Situation, yeah.
But it doesn't fit dress? Bond for me. I don't know.
But that, yeah, that to me, I preface this by telling you I'm the world's biggest Burt Bacharach enthusiast. I was, as a kid, I worshipped him. I don't know whether it was because my parents split up and I just kind of...
You also thought what the world needed was
Bacharach,
love?
Bacharach and my father kind of resembled each other. But,
Wow.
Yeah, but both had that same hair, that really choppy...
Still alive, Burt Bacharach.
Burt is still doing great. I saw his last concert here in town.
Wow.
And in fact, to go back to the Myers Brothers, I mean, I love them all and love them as kids. And Mike's success... I was never jealous of Mike's success, but I was jealous of the fact that he got to work with Burt Bacharach.
Yeah,
that he
and Elvis Costello.
Because I was kind of known in my class as being a bit of an oddball because I liked Burt Bacharach and everybody else was into the Beatles. And I used to walk around with like a little boombox listening to Bacharach songs because I'm a weirdo. And the fact that Mike got to cast Burt in his movie. And I was like, oh, God, I've always wanted to meet. And I've never met Burt Bacharach, and I probably never will. That's the only shred of jealousy I have toward Mike Myers. You know, and Burt's music for this, and I call him Burt because I've never met him. it's exactly the wrong kind of music for a James Bond film.
Yeah.
But it works for this film.
Yeah, I guess.
In its absurdity, because it's so fucking cheerful. Here's this cheerful theme as Mata Bond is being kidnapped. And it's so derails you and takes you somewhere else.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like I don't mind the melody. The Bacharach stuff as written is pretty good. I think it is the Tijuana Brass that somehow... Yeah. Just don't drive it home for me or something.
There's a lot of sort of wah-wah going on with that stuff. Especially the chase music. However, I'll put Look of Love up against any Bond love theme.
That's a good
including,
one.
You know, All the Time in the World. It's a friggin' great song. Wow. And I can't believe it lost the Oscar to Chitty Chitty Bang Bang that year.
Wow, because they had to give something to the Fleming.
To the Fleming. Fleming
was like, we're sorry about this.
Right.
Here's a Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Right.
I'm just trying to figure out this script by reading a little bit about it right now.
You mean the problems behind it or what that
is? Yeah, the problems behind it.
Yeah. Well, one of the problems in front of it is Ching Ling. When she says every fifth child born in the world is Chinese, and she's not even Chinese.
No, isn't that weird? That was so bizarre.
There was another really funny moment that I love when that guy gives himself a karate chop to the head and his comic take on that. They've got some real like journeyman comedian.
Yes. I mean, Ronnie Corbett's in the movie as that little...
Mata Hari's little...
Solo? No. Was it Solo? No. I can't remember the name of the little guy. As you... Mata. Yeah.
Five different directors.
Yeah. Oh, you're right.
Oh, wow.
Helming different segments. And stunt coordinator Richard Talmadge co-directed the final sequence. In addition to the credited writers, Woody Allen, Peter Sellers, Val Guest, Ben Hetch, Joseph Heller, Terry Southern, and Billy Wilder are all believed to have contributed.
Joseph Heller of Catch 22?
Mm-hmm.
Billy Wilder. Wow. This thing should be better.
Not really.
Val Guest was given the responsibility of splicing various chapters together and was offered a unique coordinating director, but declined, claiming the chaotic plot would not reflect well on him if he were credited.
Fair. That was back when people used to have, you know, pride in their name.
His extra credit was labeled additional sequences instead. This is amazing.
It's funny, too, that ending, how much Blazing Saddles draws on that ending, and I didn't realize that before, too.
Right.
Yeah, that I mean, that is
the
just...
the sheer chaos.
Almost I mean, purely lifted from that.
I loved the ridiculousness of the Americans arriving, but it's just cowboys.
Yeah, and then Indians.
It's insane. This movie makes no sense. This movie is, like, less cohesive and coherent than Magical Mystery Tour.
Yeah. Or Octopussy.
By a lot.
Octopussy, as we all have established here, is beautifully clear.
Jeez.
There's just some jewel smuggling and a nuclear bomb. What more could you want? This one has a nuclear bomb pill.
That's right, and animated atomic burp clouds.
Yeah, those are tiny mushroom clouds that Woody Allen burps up. This is crazy.
Can I make a huge stretch here? I mean, Woody Allen, we know from his films. What did you just do? It's got to be better than what I was about to say.
This is the funniest sentence I've ever read in my life.
What?
Where to go? Okay. Hang on. I'm sorry. I just lost it. Okay. Wells also insisted on performing magic tricks as Lashif, and the director obliged.
Of course, because he had already gotten into his big magic phase, and he was on I Love Lucy doing magic.
I don't know anything about Orson Welles' magic
phase. He has a whole documentary called After
What?
For Fake.
It was his next love in life after filmmaking, because nobody would let him make films. Nobody would give him money. But he became quite the magician. I remember, though... I watched this, you know, live on TV back in the days the Tonight Show was live. Wells guest hosted once, and he did a very long and protracted mentalist trick with members of the audience. It was supposed to be this, ladies and gentlemen, I want you all to picture a card. I mean, it's like, you know, the 300 people in the studio audience were supposed to all imagine a card. He was going to make sure that they all said the same card or something.
Yeah.
Anyway. The trick went horribly wrong. It didn't pay off at all. There was literally no applause, and he just kind of arched an eyebrow and went, "Oh, that didn't quite go the way we wanted it to, but we'll be back after these words." Yes, the aplomb with which he handled it, even though, you know, the flop sweat was running down his face.
Oh, my God.
But it was like he treated it almost as though it was the audience's fault, everybody else's fault for not paying off this mentalist thing that he was supposed to do.
This is like, this is genuinely, I was delighted when this was happening in the film. When you show Orson Welles and he does a levitation trick on the card table.
Yeah, and however,
it's not even a real trick, it's all camera stuff.
No, yeah. of course, that's the best part. But it just, the thought of Lashif, the thought of like real Lashif.
Yeah.
Also being into magic, like imagine at the poker table, like
2006 like, Casino Royale. Yeah,
just say Maz Mikkelsen. You know,
yes, this thought, like,
excuse me, while I just
tickled me.
Oh my God,
to no end. Like he had an affinity. Like if he asked Vesper to please lay on the table and then levitated her and then made her disappear.
Mr. Bond, pick a card.
Mr. Bond, Mr. Bond, I'm going to make your balls disappear.
There's also the element of that, too. Like, the chair has no upholstery. Like, that's sort of like Casino Royale.
Yeah, but that's a scene in the book.
Yes,
too.
I know, but
and
like...
so they made reference to it without showing the actual
testicular... Was that like a little nudge to the audience who had read Casino Royale?
I think so. I remember thinking that. That torture scene, though, was a complete hodgepodge of WTF. I mean, where was that supposed to go? How did he get hold of him? I mean, at one point he's jumping into a race car where he magically has on a race suit. One second he's wearing a tuxedo.
Not as fast as me in my Lotus 3.
My Lotus Formula 3.
It's probably because it was a director switch.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean,
or he had walked off, but they didn't finish the car chase.
Who knows?
It's.
Do you think this is the biggest disparity between two films with the same name, like in history of all of film, like of all reboots?
I don't know. I like the original 1946 Happy Death Day. No, I think you're right. This has to be, right? I mean, it's crazy.
It has to be. I can't think of... I mean, I know there are some movies
Heaven
that they...
Heaven Can Wait and a guy named... Was it a guy named Joe? Apart from changing it from boxing to football.
Well, Far and Away.
Yeah.
There Goes Mr. Jordan. That was the name. There Goes
but
Mr.
we
Jordan.
Just we're just talking about same title.
Yeah.
Like movies with the same title in the catalog.
Or even, I got one that for type you. Of thing. Yeah, like
Ghostbusters.
Always and a guy named Joe.
Good point.
No, but that's still the... It's both...
They're still comedies.
Comedies, and they're...
Oh, yeah, that disparity is not...
This is like... This is the film that, you know... You read the book, and you... And I read the book as a kid. In fact, I read it before... I think after I saw... the Playboy pictorial and the preview, I actually read the book in sixth grade.
Mm.
And that's, and
you must have been like
heavy reading for
fascinating
sixth
grade.
Was this before or after seeing the movie?
I think I hadn't seen the movie yet.
Wow.
Because
must not have been what you thought.
I remember when I watched the movie going, apart from the card game, this is nothing like the book. The only thing I remember about the book was, of course, her dying and learning in the sixth grade the rules of Baccarat.
Yeah.
I kept practicing them with a card because I went, this is a really confusing game, but I'm going to get this game down, you know. I'm going to get my Orson Welles impression down and this fucking game.
You've explained it to us, and I understood it as good as I've ever understood it, and then completely forgot it, and then started watching this again, and I was like, wait, what's that mean?
It's easy to forget. Batman, the original Batman movie, Adam West one, and the Christopher Nolan ones, probably close, but those are both too successful.
But you had the stopover Tim Burton world, which sort of bridges those two.
Those aren't the same name. One's Batman.
It doesn't
begins.
Have to be the same name.
Well,
it's the same
I thought
idea.
This was the game.
No, not that technically.
Because then you got, you know, because then it would qualify the Michael Keaton one and the Adam West one.
Yeah, but
those
I
are
don't
sort
think
of
those
similar,
are
though.
Still
by comparison, though, those two pictures are a lot closer than they seemed at the time. In 1989,
I know, remember?
You went, oh, this is so dark.
Yeah, now but it's so campy.
Add the Nolan dimension to it.
Yeah.
And 89 Batman is
I can't wait for the 2029 Batman,
right?
Which is just going to be a depressing.
Could be Batman Beyond when Bruce has aged himself out of the suit.
Exactly.
And he has a young protege who's in the suit now. Mm. It's a great cartoon. Check it out. Okay.
Big Batman Beyond fan over here.
Audiobooks are great for helping you be a better you, whether you want to feel healthier, get motivated, or learn something new. And with an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, and more, Audible has all the audio content you need to start your year on the right foot. For instance, did you know the Fleming James Bond novels are on Audible, including Casino Royale? Read by Dan Stevens, many people think might be a contender for the next James Bond. Live and Let Die, read by Tanner from the new Daniel Craig films, Rory Kinnear. From Russia with Love, read by Toby Stevens, the bad guy from Die Another Day. Moonraker, read by Bill Nighy, the creepy guy from Love Actually. Diamonds Are Forever, read by another Bond contender, Damian Lewis. Octopussy and The Living Daylights and Other Stories, read by another contender, Tom Hiddleston. So whether it's on your phone, through a car, from a tablet, or at home on an Amazon Echo, you can read tons of books while doing almost anything. And Audible even lets you switch seamlessly between devices, picking up exactly where you left off. Start a 30-day trial, and your first audiobook is free. Go to audible.com/bond or text bond to 500-500. That's audible.com/bond or text bond to 500-500 for a 30-day trial and free first audiobook.
All of that. Listen, the Batman animated series is the best that Batman's ever been. That's beside the point. The point here is Casino Royale and the magician Lashif, I also enjoyed his champagne trick where the cork balloon pops off and then you're like, wait, what just happened? I also enjoyed the fact that Orson Welles refused to remove the tablecloth thing that he put over the lady. It was always on his lap throughout the entire movie. When they went to his torture room, he had it on his
lap. But instead of polio, it was just heaviness.
But like, it's like just in case. No, I think it was just in case he wanted to levitate someone. Like, he's always ready to do it.
Place your hand, madam, and continue ascending into thin air.
There's one line in there, though, that I'm sure Paul Frees came in and looped because they couldn't get Orson back, where he goes, torture of the mind, Mr. Bond. And then you hear, the most exquisite torture is all in the mind. And I was like, that's Paul Frees, because that's halfway to Toucan Sam. I mean, I feel like he looped that. I don't know.
When you were doing Orson Welles at 10 years old, and then you finally hit puberty, were you just like day by day going, I'm that much closer to Orson Welles?
Actually, I kind of dropped it. I didn't really pick up the Welles impression again until like New Year's of 84. Phil Proctor from the Fire Science Theater gave me a tape of the famous Frozen Peas outtake.
Oh, yeah.
And we worked on a job till like almost 9 o'clock on New Year's Eve. It's like it was too late to go do anything. So he said, here, this will cheer you up, because I'd missed my flight. I was supposed to go to New York that morning, but I took this job that took forever. Anyway, so that tape fascinated me. Hearing Wells in the act of, as they used to say on Candy Camera, the act of being himself, I became fascinated with it. I thought, my God, he's so intimidated. I would be scared shitless of this guy if I was in the room. And he's so rude and so off. And then as I'm listening to it over and over again, I realize he's right and those two British directors are totally wrong. You don't tell Orson Welles how to read copy. You know, but I just, lines like,
get me a jury and show me how you can say, in July and I'll go down on you. It's just forgive me for my saying so. That's just stupid. In July. I'd love to know how you emphasize in and in July. Impossible. Meaningless.
I memorized it the way you memorize a song. Like I just started paying attention to every little beat, even where he, you know, had stammers or his breathing where he ran out of breath. In the middle of a sentence, it still sounded right if he did it, you know, because you just, that was the beauty of Welles. You got his Orson Welles-ness, no matter what you hired him for. There's a story within the animation world of a director starting to direct him as he's doing, actually, it was his last job.
He Transformers.
And God rest his soul, Wally Burr started to give Orson like a little bit of a direction of his character, and he stopped.
He said, Wally, stop. Faster, slower, louder, softer. That's the only direction I take.
And that was it. Wow. That was it. They got along famously from that point on, because that's all, or you know, Wally got it, and that's all the only direction he gave him. For me, the Wells thing, I developed it later on in life, but it remained a fascinating voice to me, and still does. I still think there's ways I can improve it.
It's funny at this point, he has aged into old Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like the makeup and the huskiness of
the
it
cane,
all.
The cane that he predicted, though, was slimmer. I don't think he ever saw himself as having an eating disorder.
A bit. I was fascinated. You know, the whole film, I'm just fascinated by the fact that people paid money to see this.
I'm not, because look at the star power. It's James Bond. They probably, getting him in wasn't an issue, but keeping him in must have been a problem.
Because I think they knew that I think the news that Connery had, that You Only Live Twice was going to be his last picture. It came out the same year, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
And I think the news that this is it, we've lost Connery, so here's your next taste of James Bond.
Right.
Yeah.
This is the future of James Bond. May have driven people to the theaters. I'm not sure. That's just a little theory that I have.
You know, it's interesting.
And everything was about Maud
in
those days. And spoofs were very, very in vogue. What's New Pussycat? Pictures like that. The Flint movies were very hot. Although the Flint movies were, I think they were more like little arches of the eyebrow, homages, but they weren't quite as spoofy as this, because
less parody and more satire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Coburn was so committed. Funny.
Yeah.
Coburn was so committed to playing.
Oh, yeah.
There was no archness to it. He played Derek Flint and he meant it. And even though it was a lighter character, I thought it was a really great portrayal.
We should do Imlay Flynn, our man Flint.
Yeah.
We should.
Well, we're finally getting started with these movies. So
yeah.
Maybe we will.
The whole idea, though, that this movie had even exists is so fascinating to me.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't think of what's the film franchise now that is like, I guess it's sort of like,
well, it'd be like if there was a weird, Harry Potter movie.
Or if someone had purchased in 1980 the exclusive rights to one issue of the Avengers.
Yeah, right. And could do something.
And could put out a movie that had more star power than the Avengers Age of Ultron, and could use every character in that film, and did it, but then was like, you know what? It's a comedy. We're going to put, let's have five different directors do this.
Right.
It's a strange subgenre.
But it was like, but they went in and got stars, but they got stars that were like, so in this Avengers movie, it would be like, Tom Hanks and Jack Nicholson. It would be like stars where you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise as Agent Colbert. Like,
it's a subgenre I'm curious to look at, because I think you could also take like the Roger Corman Fantastic Four that they kind of made just to keep the rights.
I have that movie at home.
And then like just these movies that exist outside of franchises that are of that franchise that, yeah. You know what I mean? I'm so curious that before the Casino Royale that you and I love so much to exist, this thing had to exist and it had to kill all Casino Royale for what? 30 years.
Yeah.
For the movie that became our favorite Bond film to exist. So
40 years.
40 years, Jesus. Right. So our favorite Bond film doesn't exist without this probably the worst Bond film.
Do you and yet that Bond film, and by the way, it's right up there for me too, the 2006 Casino Royale, Casino Royale.
Casino Royale.
Yeah. now Ian.
Oh.
Weren't we just sharing a nice cognac up in the afterlife?
Yes, I was having a bath and a brass tureen filled with cranberry vodka.
You're both on the James Bonding podcast right now. Thank you guys for being here.
Oh.
It's always a delight to travel from the celestial.
I flew in chitey chitey bang bang.
Oh, well, you know, Ian, we're just discussing a film that Orson was in.
I was lowered in
Transformers. I love that film.
No, it's not Transformers. It's actually Casino Royale.
Oh, I thought it was Frozen Peas, the movie.
I love that one as well. Mm. I also loved you in Paul Masson. What? Yes.
Paul Masson Strikes Back?
when you wrote the character of the chief.
The French. Champagne has long been celebrated for its excellence. There is a California champagne inspired by that same French excellence and like the best champagne, it's vintage dated and fermented in the cut.
Action,
I'd like
please.
To now do a magic trick for you all. She'll make this bottle of Booker's disappear.
I can do that as well. I do most days, as well as 70 Chesterfield Turkish cigarettes.
Chesterfields are delicious.
I eat them. These days, you know, I cut to the chase and just salt and eat. Right in.
Mr. Fleming, are you happy with the way Casino Royale turned out?
Which one there, dear boy?
The one from 19. The one that Orson Welles did.
Heavens, yes. That's what I was trying to get at with the novel, but I fell short. When I finally saw the film, I was just in love with it. And then, of course, they smeared it and tarnished it in 2006.
But you were happy with my participation, were you not, Ian?
Dear boy, I couldn't have been happier. I should have had you out to Golden Eyes sometime out in Jamaica, and we could have put some cocoa butter on you and sizzled you up in the Jamaican sun.
That would have been lovely. I've never been sizzles in Jammy Acres.
You simply haven't
is
lived.
Is that anywhere near Acme Acres by chance?
Absolutely.
Sorry,
Mr. Welles, did you read Casino Royale before you took the part?
No.
Why would he?
No, I would. I don't read such tripe.
I didn't read it before I wrote it.
That's true. That's very true.
I read philosophy and cookbooks. Yes.
What's your favorite thing to cook, Mr. Welles?
My favorite thing, of course, is to cook rosebud frozen peas, full of country goodness and green penis. Oh wait, I used that joke already in this podcast. With apologies to the folks who made the critic.
I don't know if you've ever had frozen peas, Mr. Fleming, but they're out
of
this world.
You know, I don't often have frozen food. I like eggs scrambled with green figs and yogurt.
I find if you put the frozen peas under your tongue and then imbibe some good French cognac and light with a Cuban cigar, cooks them up deliciously.
That actually kind
of I'm having trouble breathing
great.
Now.
Oh, Mr. It's Welles.
Not because I'm non-corporeal, but I still wheeze in the next life.
So you're not living, but also having trouble staying alive.
Yes, apparently I damaged myself that badly in the life.
I sort of get
in
it.
In the afterlife,
know.
I'm having trouble breathing and keeping my cholesterol down.
I've smoked so much that my lungs have become sort of like a volcanic rock, you know, very porous. So I can't keep anything in, including air. And when I drink, you know in those films when someone's shot and they do a comic take where all the water spills out of them?
Mm-hmm.
It's like that with air. So there's a slight wheeze as I walk and I act as a sort of biological bellows that pushes the air out as I go.
Listen.
Like a pumice stone.
Yes, I suppose. Or a loofah.
I am just so sad that Matt Gourley, my co-host.
Who's that now?
He's the co-host. We do this podcast together. You've never met him.
I don't much like him.
He's often out of the room when you're here.
Well, that's why I don't like him. Seems to have an aversion to me. It's probably a lesbian.
Well, thanks so much for coming down, Mr. Fleming.
Absolutely. I'm going to take my little library ladder back to heaven. You know,
wait,
the kind
I thought you arrived in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
I did, but it broke down as it's wont to do, so I'm going to climb my little oaken library ladder that rolls along on wheels in my library. Bye now.
When you get up there, get 17 or 18 people to pull up on the chain, would you? I need to ascend as well.
I will.
Thank you, Anne.
I know a whole squad of butch gals up there that barely speak to me because they know... What?
A squad of butch gals.
Squad of butch gals.
Like a Pussy Galore's Flying Circus.
You crew. Know, I was wrong about it down here, and up there I've really come to like those women.
Mm. Well, they're beautiful, and they're just as good as everybody else, Mr.
Rugby
Fleming.
Rugby players to the end. I've got to go. I've said too much.
So long, Mr. Fleming.
Bye now.
Matt, you're out of toilet paper in the bathroom, by the way.
Wait, now, guys, you're both not going to believe this. You're not going to believe this. But Ian Fleming and Orson Welles were actually here.
The two dead men?
They believe it or not.
Long since dead?
Yes, they appeared. Orson was lowered with chains, and Ian arrived on Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And left. Orson had 17 people pull him back up. As soon as you guys left the room, they appeared.
Matt, I'm truly worried about you.
No, this is, it's all on tape. Have you ever gone back and listened to those sections of the podcast?
No.
Well, I assure you.
I'm very busy.
No, yeah. Maurice, they're there. And if you've heard me talk to Ian Fleming, right?
Yeah, but.
Yeah. Well, it happened again while you were out of the room.
All right, let's just get on with it.
That was more cohesion.
In the actual movie. Yes,
true.
Yes.
I mean, I assume that was true. I was.
Why does Sir James Bond have a stutter?
And then loses it.
He has a stammer that he has in his real life, but when he's on the job as James Bond, he doesn't have it. He also.
Like how Sherlock Holmes doesn't need cocaine when he's on a case.
Right. Yeah. But they are kind of implying that Bond is celibate, like by his natural state, and doesn't really drink and stammers.
Yes.
But when he's on the job, that's not the case. But
he does try to steal a look at Ursula Andress's breasts when they're chatting on the precursor to the Apple Watch.
But they also, the way he kisses Moneypenny and finds out it's his daughter, implies that he and Moneypenny in this case might really have actually had something going on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or they, in this world, that's how they always greeted each other.
Maybe. Yeah.
Listen, this movie's a mess.
It's a fucking mess.
Yeah.
Can we say fucking?
Yeah, we sure can.
Okay.
I enjoyed some, I would say probably a total of 7 of the minutes that I watched. I enjoyed.
Yeah, maybe 7. Seven
how long
to 10
is the big fight scene in Casino Royale?
The big fight scene in the real Casino Royale?
In 67.
Probably. You're talking about
six of the 7 minutes.
The last 18 minutes of the movie?
Right.
Is that what you're talking about?
Cowboys,
the Blazing
Indians,
Saddles. Yeah.
George Raft, you know, shooting
his
himself
weird
with
cameo.
A gun.
He must have just been there that day, right?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
and Peter Sellers is in the Peter O'Toole.
Peter O'Toole,
yes,
as a Scottish Highlander who gets asked if he's Richard Burton. asks Peter Sellers if he's Richard Burton. He goes, "No, I'm Peter O'Toole." Peter O'Toole standing right in front of me. He goes, "No, I'm Peter." Then you're the finest man who's ever breathed. I love. I mean, those little moments make the film worth watching for me. Those little comic asides, and again, the idea that the whole film is this British off. You know, there's so much in there that I do smile at, even as they try to paste it together to make it make sense, which it can't. And yet the way the film ends, we're further in. You think so?
I think
not without Peter Sellers.
If I had a little bit of time, I could recut this movie to make some sense, like, and actually do chapters.
I think it's worth watching, even though it's a bit of a slog to get through. because it's strange to see all of these ingredients that you recognize served up in a meal like this, you know, and it's worth it for that reason. But for me, it's like a once every 15 years type of movie.
Right.
Which I wouldn't say that about any of the other Bond movies. I could watch them probably once a year at their worst.
Yeah. Know? Yeah, I will never see this movie again.
You think?
I think so.
What about when we do the commentary?
No, then I'll see it again.
Okay.
I mean, there's that.
No, we can't do commentary for that.
Yeah, we sure can. We can do whatever we want.
I know, but
we still have to do Star Warsing.
That's true. So let's rate this film.
Yeah, on a scale of what? Is this, we're going to use the 007 scale?
We might as well stick to our scale. Okay. I mean, they do use 007 codename in this.
They sure do.
Everybody's 007.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seven 007s.
Well, you know, for me, it's interesting. This movie gets a 002. Well, wait.
High praise indeed.
Is 000 the lowest it could be?
Yeah.
It gets a 001. Because there are some interesting things that are worth seeing once.
I'm going to have to agree. I'm going to say 001. And I'm looking to Maurice to bring the average up there because I understand ranking something high as a personal
nostalgic
favorite.
Situation. Yeah. Yeah.
And I will rank it higher than 001. But the fondness with which I remember it, I mean, the film... And I said this the last time, the film is of a time. You know, it's the 60s. It's a time I lived through. Did I mention I'm going to be 60 next week? And so for me, it does hold a nostalgic value. And I do remember films looking, you know, similar to this at the time. I didn't know how good they could be. I was going to just mention really quickly that, you know, you were talking about how dissimilar it is from the 2006 Casino Royale. What about the Barry Nelson version?
We haven't even talked about that.
Is really close to, or will you cover that in another
episode? I think we will probably.
Okay,
do
so I'll leave that alone.
How long is that?
It's under an hour.
Under an hour because it had to fit in with commercials into the season.
That's really probably the closest of any Casino Royale to the novel.
It follows the novel, and 2006 Casino Royale follows it. But I'll leave that alone for the next time you cover it. The mess that this film is, the one thing I wanted to hit on, though, to touch on, was that, and speaking of hitting on, so much inappropriate sexual groping in this film. I mean, when the girl falls backwards for the levitation trick, one of the two guys that catches her clearly gropes her breast.
Jeez, I didn't
before she's put on the levitation. He clearly has his hand on her breast as she goes back, and then Orson begins
his levitation. Get your hand off that woman's breast, sir.
But the fact that at the end of the film, and I'm spoiler alert for all of you who I know are rushing to it, the fact that everybody dies.
Yeah.
To me, this makes a great existential comment on the whole of life, because everybody in the film is a hero, and yet at the end, everybody you liked, everybody you cared about, everybody who, you know, you laughed at, everybody whose mission you wanted to succeed such that you could figure it out, is blown up. And it's like, well, that's life. In its own way, it's a brilliant film for saying that, for just showing me that no matter what the fuck I do, at the end,
I'm going to be playing a harp with Woody Allen.
I hope, because I got a lot of questions for him in between strums. So I'll give it a 002.
Wow, that's even lower than I thought, maybe. I thought, okay, but that's fair and judicious.
Know, because we're comparing it to Bond films.
Yeah.
As a 60s spoofy kind of, you know, when's Red Skelton going to walk into this? You know, I might give it a 004.
Right.
Or just because it's the type of film I remember.
Yeah.
But as a Bond film, yeah, 002, maybe, but 001 and a half.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's not a Bond film.
Yeah, that's true. Well, speaking of Bond films, I wanted to just touch on Spectre for a second because Sean McCabe over at timetobond.com, which is a great website. In fact, he just did an article
on... it's Time to Bond.
That's right.
I follow him on the Twitter.
Yeah, me too.
I do.
He just did an article on all the other 00s in the movies, which is great. He kind of like sets them up and tells you exactly.
Oh, very cool.
Interesting. I wonder where he would get such an idea.
Did we do it?
I don't think we talked about
that.
Well, we've talked about it.
No, but I feel like we talked about it like about a month ago, the curiousness of, like, I would love to see what... I would love to see a list of all the double O's that have appeared in the movies.
Well, good for him for doing it.
Does he touch on whether or not they ever have another 004?
Huh?
Did they touch on whether or not the number gets recycled once an agent dies?
There are, because 009 is used twice. Right. 00, I think, might be four. I can't remember. 009 is the Octopussy Bond and
the Frank Sinatra Bond.
Ooh. What?
The Spectre, 009.
Yes, that's right. And it's actually 002. He's the Living Daylights one, I think, and something else. I forget. But anyway, he was nice enough to send me some of the pages from the Logan draft of the Spectre script. And it has the scene where Bond gets tortured with the drill to the head was originally a Texas Hold'em scene where Oberhauser says, if I win, you both die. If you win, I'll let the girl go.
Oh, thank God that changed. Somehow I'm pleased.
Yeah,
with
it doesn't quite work. But the thing that's interesting is, you know how when M confronts C at the end and he takes his gun out of the thing? That was originally Bond confronting him, and it was a nod back to the Casino Royale, I know where you keep your gun sort of thing.
They do
just say, leave you to think that C stands for something other than... What does M say it is?
Careless.
Careless, yeah. So that was fascinating to me. And also, we have new products in podswag.com/bond. The Knickknack Tabasco shirt is officially for sale, as well as a replenishment of signed posters. And the Pigeon Double Take and Kananga Balloon t-shirts are there as well.
Vote with your shirt monies, everybody.
Just, yeah.
So Pigeon Double Take should probably sell a lot more than
Doesn't
Kananga
seem to
Balloon.
Be the case, though. And also, there's a Facebook group, I believe, now that a lovely listener has started. I think, I forget what it's called, but it's just James Bonding Facebook group, if you look it up. I don't know. I'm off Facebook again for a while. I can't take it.
Understood.
Yeah.
I can't take it either.
Yeah.
So I wanted to say that we saw the bagpipe machine gun in this movie.
Yeah.
And we're going to see it again next week.
Oh, that's
and the world
right.
is not enough.
Yeah.
I'm and looking go forward to the Scottish to castle.
Yeah.
Maurice, do you have anything to promote?
I've got a couple of things that I'd love to talk about, but I've got NDAs on them.
Wow.
Just one last observation. You talk about the recycling of the bagpipe gun. The poison pen letter joke appears in this movie first.
That's right.
It appears
yes.
in the Roger Moore film. The Roger Moore Bond people stealing from Charles K. Feldman.
And not only that, it's in this film, but they call out what a tired joke it
what
would
a tired
be.
Joke yeah. it is. It's
yeah.
I love that they also called out Orson Welles, Le Chiffre, for doing his magic again with, you know, the casino director going, oh, he's winning and doing magic tricks throughout. I love that. I just love those little
so
moments.
Funny to me.
I can talk about a Disenchantment coming up this summer from Matt Groening, and yours truly gets to play a rather Vincent Price-esque Prime Minister of the Kingdom. But I'm very excited to be a part of that. Coming this Saturday, which means it will have passed by the time this is on the air, I've become part of the My Little Pony universe. I know that'll thrill your listeners.
It will.
But I am actually a villain. I'm a villain in My Little Pony.
Wow. So, yeah. What is your name?
I play Principal Headmaster Naysay. Yes. And we actually... Well, I can't go into too much, but so that's kind of fun, and I wish I could talk more about anything that I've been known for before that's coming back, but unfortunately I'm under an NDA not
well,
to...
Well, we'll have to have you back, and hopefully by then...
Well,
yeah, by then,
look, really, I've read the rumors, guys. Stay tuned. There's going to be some great things coming.
Yeah.
Matt, we will meet again.
Oh, we're going to meet again. James Bonding will return.
For the world is enough.
No, huh? Not enough.
We did this movie.
No, man. Let's pick a new movie. You tried to convince me.
I think we did this.
Wait, should we pick another movie? Let's do Goldfinger again.
Oh, no, okay.
The world is not enough. Everyone's favorite James Bond.
Will return. James Bonding
Podcast. So you think Logan's a good person?
I do.
Came here because I was running. Okay. Running from myself. Okay, please. But I'm not going to run again.
I promise.
Maybe he's good then.
No, I'm one of the good guys.
Or maybe not.
Marvel and Stitcher present Wolverine the Long Night. Out now, only on Stitcher Premium. For 1 month free, go to WolverinePodcast.com and use promo code Marvel.
This has been an Earwolf production. Executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Hey, this is Arnie Niekamp from the improv fantasy podcast Hello from the Magic Tavern. I fell through a dimensional portal behind a Burger King in Chicago into the magical land of Foon, and I started a podcast. Season 3 has just begun with a brand new adventure to defeat the Dark Lord. If you're a new listener or you've fallen behind, Season 3 is a great jumping on point. And we've got great guests like Justin McElroy.
I sound like a fancy college professor. Eight nights.
Rachel Bloom.
You all see my collection of men corpses and one woman.
Felicia Day and Colton Dunn.
You've seen me have intercourse with a variety of species.
It's a bummer.
Andy Daly.
You have the members of Genesis listed, but Phil Collins has crossed out and then circled and crossed out again.
Yes, I have killed Phil Collins twice.
Thomas Middleditch.
Jesus! I mean, Jazos! Ruler of the Eighth Circle!
And that's just the beginning. Season 3 of Hello from the Magic Tavern is out now. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.